wilderness experiences. Today I wanted to talk about going into the wilderness. And all of us, I know, many times feel like we are in a spiritual wilderness, although we have, in a sense, an oasis every Sabbath when we can come and get together with people like mine. We can come out of the wilderness that we've been a part of for the whole week. And I know there are some here who are blessed to have family nearby, and in that way they even have that kind of an oasis where they have perhaps a environment where they're not always in the wilderness. They're in with people of like mind. God sometimes takes people into the wilderness for a reason, and sometimes they are driven to the wilderness. We know that Abram, when he was called out, is actually called out into a wilderness. He walked into a land that he didn't know and had to trust that God would take him where he wanted him to be. Moses, early in his life, was driven into the wilderness when he had to flee from Egypt. Later on, he led the nation of Israel toward that same wilderness. Men like Elijah, John the Baptist, and even Jesus were sent out into the wilderness to learn lessons. As I mentioned, the nation of Israel also went out into the wilderness, and they were tested by that experience. And unfortunately, they didn't do very well with that experience. It's weird speaking because this section is almost empty, and there's a lot of people there and a lot of people here, but there's hardly anybody over here. So I'll try to look around. So with that backdrop, let's go and look at a story that I know many of you are familiar with in the book of Numbers. Book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 13, and I'd like to just kind of go through this story and look at this today as an example of something that happened to Israel, and hopefully we can learn from their experience. Numbers chapter 13 and verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one of them a leader from among them. Now, if we go look at the parallel account of this, we know that this was not totally God's idea. It was the people that came to Moses and said, you know, we want to check this out. We want to make sure that God's telling us the truth. And we want to send some people in to check this out. So that was really the genesis of this. And God said, okay, if you want to do this, that's fine. Let's send leaders into this land. So these were not just your average, everyday Israelite. These were leaders, chiefs of the tribes that were represented in this land. It would be like maybe taking all the members of the Council of Elders for United and saying, we're going to send these people in to this part of the world and have them check it out before we go there. So these were important men, leaders, and it actually goes ahead and names these people. So God actually inspired Moses to record their names, write them down for us. And it goes ahead and starts to list them starting in verse 4. It starts with the tribe of Reuben, and I won't read all these names. You can read through them. But we have a leader mentioned here from every tribe. And among them, of note, is Caleb from the tribe of Judah. And Joshua, or as he was called here, Hosea. And then later on in verse 16, it says his name was also Joshua. So these two, Joshua went in as a representative of Ephraim. Caleb went in as a representative of Judah. In verse 16 of Numbers 13, these are the names of the men Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hosea, the son of Nun, Joshua. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said, go this way into the south. Go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. So this is probably late summer, maybe when they went in there. So they got to see all the stuff that was growing and being harvested. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath, and up through the south. So they did a tour of the entire territory that they were going to be given. Verse 23, and they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. So quite a cluster of grapes that they brought back. And they also brought some pomegranates and figs. And the place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster, which the men of Israel cut down there. The Hebrew word is cluster. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. Now note that time, 40 days. 40 days is the time that God uses in a lot of examples in the Bible. 40 days. Christ was in the wilderness for 40 days. These spies spied out the land for 40 days. And then they come back, and we all know, I'm sure we've read this before, they come back, and 10 out of the 12 spies say, yes, we saw a lot of good things. We saw a lot of good crops and fertile land, but, and there's this big but, was the people are strong, and the cities are high, the mountains, or the walls are too thick and too high for us to get through. And they talk about all the various people that live there, verse 29. And then Caleb, verse 30, quiets the people and says, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. Caleb and Joshua both sensed what was happening, and they wanted to change the momentum away from that negative vibe that was being presented. But the men who had gone up with him, and remember, these are leaders, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so were we in their sight. So they said, these people are way too powerful for us to handle. I was thinking of that this verse this morning. I went outside, and it's amazing how much your garden can change in 1 week. I went out to look at some sunflowers I had planted, and I think they grew 3 or 4 feet in the week that I was gone. They were now 10 feet high. And I looked at that plant and I thought, what would it be like if I saw a warrior that tall? And here I am at 5'8", and yeah, that would be quite intimidating to look at somebody that big, especially with armor. So the story goes on, and the congregation in chapter 14, the next chapter, they cried and wept. They were upset. And the children of Israel complained in verse 2, and they said, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or only if we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to the land to fall by the sword? Listen to these words, because God is going to give the same message back to them. That our wives and children should become victims. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? And they said, let us select a leader and return. So they were going to essentially discontinue the leadership of Moses and Aaron and pick someone else that would take them back. Verse 6, Joshua and the son of Nun and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes. Tearing your clothes means you're very upset, very distraught. And they spoke to them and said, the land we pass through is exceedingly good. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them. Some of the other translations says, we will eat them up. Only don't rebel, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Verse 9, and their protection has departed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. The glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. So suddenly, even though they had that presence in their midst, they had that cloud over the tabernacle, they had that fire over the tabernacle, they had the manna every day, they forgot. And God had to come down and show them, hey, I'm still here. I'm over here, you know. You guys are talking about me, and I'm right here. I'm in the room. And for the first out of three times in this story, you read through these couple chapters and numbers. This first time, God basically tells Moses, how long are these people going to reject me? Just get away from them. Get away from these people. I'll just kill them. And I'm going to start over with you and Aaron. We'll start again. Just think the timeline. We think of time in such discrete ways because we're limited. And yet God is thinking, hey, if I have to start over with you, Moses, and Aaron, I'll do it. We'll go another, 200, 300, 400 years till we have another nation of Israel that's maybe ready. But Moses intercedes for them in Numbers 14, 17, and he says, and this is an interesting thing that he says, similar to what Brandon said, you got to read these words and understand what Moses says. In verse 17, Moses says to God, and now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying. Now notice, do we think of God's power in these terms? Normally we think of God's power in his ability to create, his ability to defend his people. But here Moses says, let the power of my Lord be great. And he continues in verse 18 that the Lord is long-suffering, abundant in mercy. He's quoting here from the Ten Commandments. Forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even till now. So he's telling God, demonstrate your power in this way, in your mercy, in your ability to grant forgiveness. I know sometimes I look around at the world, and I'm sure you do too, and you think, how can God put up with this? How can he wait any longer to intervene in what we see happening around us? Well, it's a property of his power that he can wait, that he can have mercy. Down in verse 20, let's go continue in verse 20. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. But truly, as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. And because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness have put me to the test now these 10 times. 10 times. God says, I've had it. And have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. And then he tells them, okay, turn around. We're going, essentially, we're going back into the wilderness. We're going back. Let's go down to Numbers 14:27. And God says, "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard their complaints, which the children of Israel make against me. Say that I'm as I live, says the Lord. Just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you." So here are the words that the Israelites said. God is going to allow our children to die. He's brought us out here to kill us. Verse 29, "The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who are numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above. Except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in. They shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. And your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years and bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness." Imagine how those men and women must have felt looking at their children and thinking another 40 years. "I, the Lord, have spoken this. According to the number of days," actually, let's go to 34. "According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land." So he's saying, you went to the land for 40 days. "For each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I have spoken this. I will surely do so to all of this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die." Now the men, the leaders, whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive of the men who went to spy out the land. Then, we don't know how long it goes by, but in Numbers 16, we're given the story of Korah, who was a Levite, and then of Dathan and Abiram, who were Reubenites. They came to Moses and they said, and we'll just kind of go through this, "You are taking too much on your shoulders. We're also Levites. We want a position next to you." So it says they rose up, and 250 leaders of the congregation, quite a sizable number of people, come, men of renown, they're called, men of renown. So important men again. They gather together and they say, "Moses, you've taken too much on yourselves. Why are you exalting yourselves above all of us?" So when Moses heard it, it says, and this is verse 4, number 16, he fell on his face. And he essentially said, "Okay, let's have a test. You think that you can come before God and serve him? That's fine. Let's have you do that." So he tells them to gather these men and bring censers, which were little metal containers that they could burn incense in. And he says, bring censers, all of you. Come before God tomorrow, and we will see whom God chooses. So, they do come. So if you drop down, Moses reminds them, especially Korah, that, you know, you're part of the sons of Levi. You actually were chosen to serve in the tabernacle. It's no small thing that God has asked you to do, and yet you're seeking more. If we look in the book of Psalms about this account, it actually says, and I'll read it real quickly, Psalm 78, verse 40. Actually, that's not the right one. I'm sorry. About Korah. Psalm 106:16. It says regarding them, in the camp they were jealous of Moses and Aaron, the Lord's Holy One. So that jealousy was what prompted them to do this. Well, we know the story. We drop down later into the chapter. They come, and once again, for the second time, God says to Moses and Aaron, and he says it in Numbers 16:20-21. He says, get away from these people. I will consume them. I'm going to kill them all. Just get away from them. We'll start over. Once again, Moses intercedes. So Numbers 16:23, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the congregation and say, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation saying, depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed. Verse 27, they got away from the tents, Dathan and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, and their little children. So they were standing there. All the people had basically separated themselves from them. So we have the tents of Korah, and then Dathan and Abiram were the tribe of Reuben. So they camped near each other. Reuben camped, I think, on one side of the tabernacle. So they were probably next to each other. And Moses says in verse 28, by this you shall know the Lord has sent me to do all these works, that I have not done them of my own will. This is not a power trip for me. In fact, in one point he tells God, look, did I raise all these people? Are they my kids? If this is how it's going to be, just kill me. I don't want to have to deal with this. Moses was not riding on a power trip here. He had a lot of responsibility on his shoulders. And he says, if these men, verse 29, die naturally like all men, so if they don't, if they live out their lives to old age, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates a new thing and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them and they go down alive into the pit, then you understand that these men have rejected the Lord. And it came to pass as he finished speaking these words, the ground split apart. Imagine that there was probably a little bit of rumbling. Maybe there was a minor earthquake. The ground probably shook. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with all their households and all the men with Korah, with all their goods. So they and all those with them went down alive into the pit. The earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly. Then all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. So it produced quite a reaction in the people of Israel. And then God did not forget about the 250 men standing with censers in front of the tabernacle. Verse 35, and fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to pick up the censers out of the blaze, for they are holy. Scatter the fire some distance away. And then they took those censers, they took that metal after it had cooled down, and they hammered it into a plate, piece of plate, to cover the altar, so that everybody that went into the tabernacle after that was reminded, and they saw that plate over the altar, they were reminded of those 250 men. Psalm 78:40 gives us a little more background on this story, these stories. Psalm 78:40. How often they provoked him in the wilderness and grieved him in the desert. Yes, again and again, they tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel. They did not remember his power the day when he redeemed them from the enemy. The people forgot. They forgot what had happened to them in Egypt. They allowed themselves to become complacent. Remember, they had, like I said, they had the manna. Did they not realize every morning when they went out to pick up that bread that God was feeding them? God was giving them food every day. He was there as a cloud over the tabernacle or a fire at night. They had all the signs of God's presence in their midst. And yet, if we continue to read through the book of Numbers, it continues to happen over and over. I think there's another, after this incident, they come again and want to complain. You would think after these two things that they would have realized, okay, that's enough. We realize God's in charge here, and we're going to do what he says. Let's go to the book of Hebrews. Book of Hebrews chapter 3, the writer of Hebrews wrote about this as a warning for us, as a warning for us who are also in the wilderness. We're in the wilderness also. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7. Therefore, as the Holy Spirit says today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, in the day of trial in the wilderness. For your fathers tested me. They tried me and saw my works for 40 years. So he's talking about even those children that wandered for 40 years in the wilderness also tried and tested God. Therefore, I was angry with that generation and said, they will always go astray in their heart and they have not known my ways. So I swore in my wrath, I shall not enter my rest. Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Drop down to verse 17 in the same chapter. Now with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? So all those men and women over 20 years old, who had to walk through that wilderness for 40 years until they were all dead. And we're told later on, I think it's in the book of Deuteronomy in the first few chapters, that the last person of that generation is dead. Now we're ready to go into the land. And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who did not obey? So we see they could not enter in because of unbelief. And here was the crucial problem with them. Even despite every single physical manifestation they saw of God around them in the wilderness, they could not believe. They didn't have the faith to truly realize anything that God tells us to do, we can do. We don't care how many giants there are or how many walls. God will take care of that. So are we in danger? Sometimes we can be in danger of falling into complacency. As we get in this modern world, we can forget about God and his power. Do we see his power around us? I look outside and I see the beauty around us, the creation, the gardens that people are growing, the flowers. And as Brandon mentioned, you think that every single one of those had to be designed and created in a multiple dependency system designed by our Father. Our challenge as we walk through this wilderness is to live more by God's Spirit and less by the old man that's in us, less control of that zombie that Mr. Petty mentioned. We have that zombie that's always trying to take over, come back to life. Let's go to Galatians 5. Galatians 5, and we'll conclude here. Galatians 5, verse 16. I'm going to read this passage out of the Complete Jewish Bible translation. I like the way this translation words these verses. Galatians 5 and verse 16. What I'm saying is this. Run your lives by the Spirit. then you will not do what your old nature wants. When we're in the wilderness, we have to run our lives by the Spirit. We have to depend on that Spirit in us. For the old nature wants what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit wants what is contrary to the old nature. These oppose each other, so that you find yourselves unable to carry out your good intentions. Since it is through the Spirit that we have life, let it also be through the Spirit that we order our lives day by day. Let us not become conceited, provoking and envying each other. So as we walk through this wilderness, let's remember the cloud, the fire that is there inside of each one of us as God's Holy Spirit.